Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blockbusting, the podcast where we love to hate the movies. I'm your host, Jay Light. Joining me today is Alex Denny.
Hi, I'm Alex Denny. Nice to be here.
It's so nice to have you. I was a big fan of doing your podcast, Island Life, which if you haven't listened to, you guys should go check out. It's a very, very fun, whimsical podcast.
Yeah, Jay plays a talking platypus on it.
So. Yeah. You sent me a platypus picture the other day on Facebook. You tagged me in one, which I appreciate. And I was like, oh, simpler times.
It's something I kind of find. I feel like pretty often people who are on the show, for people who don't know what the show is, Island Life with Alex Denny is a improvised podcast where every episode is a broadcast from a man shipwrecked on an island of talking animals. And so I generally try to get the guests to pick the animal that they want to play. And I often feel like, and I know for a fact, often it's like, I want to be this animal. This is my spirit animal. I don't know if, you know, that the platypus is your spirit animal per se, but definitely once they've been on, if I see something that has that animal, there's a good chance I'm going to send it to you.
It's very thoughtful. I mean, I never would have, frankly, I was looking, when you sent me the list of animals to pick, I was like, all right, there's a lot of animals here. Because I feel like a lot of people have the same spirit animal.
Sure.
And so I never really think about myself in those terms, but I was like, I want to be something interesting. Mm-hmm. And what is an interesting animal? And platypi are one of the most interesting animals I think ever existed.
Absolutely. And it was definitely an interesting episode.
So
check it out. I think it's I think it might be episode 49 for anyone who wants to go check it out.
Go take a listen, y'all. Available wherever you can get podcasts, I would assume. All the places.
Yep.
Stitcher Premium, Stitcher Regular, Stitcher Unleaded.
Yeah. Islandlifepod.com. And on all of the socials.
Well, you also have a really, you made a movie choice that was a very outside the ballpark kind of pick.
Yeah.
Because you chose to talk about today, you wanted to bring to my attention Little Nicky, which is a movie that I kind of forgot existed. 2000 American fantasy comedy film directed by Stephen Brill, written by Brill, Adam Sandler, and Tim Herlihy, the classics Adam Sandler, Happy Madison collaboration team.
Yep.
Starring Adam Sandler, Patricia Arquette, Harvey Keitel, Reese Evans, Tommy, Tiny Lister Jr., and Rodney Dangerfield.
Yep.
Depicts the son of Satan and an angel as he tries to save his father and prevent his demonic brothers from taking over Earth. Tell me about the first time you ever attempted to watch this movie.
Yes. So as I was trying to think about films that I hate, and I'm sure this is actually brought up by multiple people, because I was actually like just before this listening to the episode Jules Ford was on, talking about Lost World, and he said basically what I think I said to you when you reached out to me, which was like, I try to avoid watching movies I think I'm going to hate, or I like bail out really quick if it looks like it's not going to be my thing. Mm-hmm. But I did remember that this Little Nicky is, I believe, the only movie I've ever walked out of. In the year 2000, I was invited for my friend Kevin's birthday party in Chesapeake, Virginia, where I grew up, to go see Little Nicky with him and a couple other friends. And his mom took us to the mall and dropped us off. She did not join us in watching Little Nicky. And I don't remember how far I got into the movie, but I was a pretty good little Mormon boy and ultimately just started to feel really guilty about watching this very blasphemous film.
Wow, interesting.
And so I just at some point just got up and like not calling attention to myself, but just like got up and left the theater and sat outside, in the mall where the theaters were, and waited until the movie's over and Kevin's mom came to pick us up.
Oh man. Okay. So you walked out. Did Kevin stay inside the whole time?
Oh, everybody did. I don't even know if they realized I was gone until they came out. And then they all thought, yeah, that I was weird for leaving. And I think maybe even felt a little bad just because obviously I hadn't enjoyed the movie, but I tried to be like, just not for me. I've always tried to be like the cool Mormon friend. And be like, it's just not for me, you guys. But yeah, I couldn't handle it. I mean, I definitely went on as I got older. And to say now, I am definitely not Mormon, but I was mm-hmm. till I was 24.
Right.
But I went on to watch far, you could say, more blasphemous things than even Little Nicky down the road. But at the time, because year 2000, I was, 12-ish okay. years old. Little 12-year-old Alex was too much of a goody-goody.
I mean, listen, as somebody else who is a little bit of a goody-goody as a kid at that age, I get where you're coming from. I also had not a Mormon upbringing, but I did have a religious upbringing. I grew up in various Christian offshoots is not the right word. It's not like I grew up in like a fucking Christian cult. Yeah, denominations. That's the word. I don't know why I always forget the word denomination and go with like flavor of Christianity.
Sure, flavor of Christianity.
Yeah, I feel like flavor's better. Like I remember when I was a kid, I was in Boy Scouts and they had
me too.
You have your patch that you can put on that shows mm-hmm. what religion you are, which yep. is a really weird
Boy Scouts are so about religion.
Self-identifying thing. Yeah, they love religion in the Boy Scouts. Yeah. They got a lot of
They love the Christian religion for the most part. I guess they do, because I think they do actually. You can have patches for like being Jewish or being Muslim or something like that, I think.
Yeah.
But definitely honoring God is a part of the whole organization.
Yeah, something to do my duty to God and my country.
Yep. Being reverent is one of the most, like, mm-hmm. Of all the things a scout should be.
Yep. But, man, I feel I'm in a different place because I would not have even been allowed to go see a movie like this.
I'm not even sure. I mean, my mom, mainly my mom. I mean, I had a stepdad, too, but he was actually much more lenient than my mom on these things. But our family would go through varying degrees of strictness on mm-hmm. what we were and were not allowed to do. See, we went through periods where like on Sundays, I literally wasn't allowed to could do kind of anything that wasn't, church related. If I watched something, okay. it had to be like a church movie, that kind of thing.
Interesting.
And then other times we wouldn't do that, and we'd go out to eat at Golden Corral after church on Sundays. So who knows where we were at when
As
I was 12.
As if Golden Corral is a blasphemous place to eat.
Golden Corral is the place to be after church on a Sunday, especially in Southern Virginia, I think.
That was going to be my next question is where you grew up. But
Yeah, the Virginia Beach area, Southeast Virginia.
Is there a big Mormon population out there?
No, not really at all. But okay. I mean, there's enough, but yeah, it's nothing like, cause I went to school out in BYU, Utah, and in Hawaii, and even Hawaii, actually, it's like the second most common religion on the island
really?
After I think like Catholicism, Arizona. I was just visiting my cousin in Phoenix down there. And that's another like fairly highly Mormon populated place, but no Southern Virginia. No, definitely a major minority of religion down there.
Yeah. You guys were the outliers. Yeah. I remember cause I had a Mormon neighbor growing up
mm-hmm.
and I remember everybody in the family, they were all blonde and they were all very tall.
Sounds pretty Mormon.
Yeah. And then we also had, one Jewish kid who I went to school with too. And I was like, I've never, these are the religions that like, I know people are like, they practice these, but I've never met anyone else who did those, who that was where they, those were their faith lay until I left Texas, which is primarily where I grew up. At least it's a lot of like, you got a lot of Southern Baptists, you got a lot of, Methodists, Presbyterians, Catholics, the whole, Yeah. Pick throw a dart
at the South.
Yeah. Throw a dart at a Christian bookstore and you'll hit a Bible that somebody reads out of in Texas. That's how it goes.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not so different where I'm from either. Once again, like anywhere kind of in the South, it's just all, Southern Baptist and stuff like that for sure.
I think so. The most interesting question I have right now is, what did you do with the guilt that you felt after leaving Little Nicky? Like, did you take that anywhere? Like, did that sit with you for a while?
I mean, I honestly can't remember, but certainly, the idea of needing to, I don't imagine I felt the need to like talk to my bishop about going to see Little Nicky. And in fact, perhaps like felt a certain amount of pride at being willing to walk out of a movie that I felt like I wasn't supposed to see.
Okay.
So I think there can be a little of both. Like, once again, like, I probably shouldn't have gone to this movie in the first place, but at least I was, good enough to leave when I felt like the spirit was telling me that this is not right.
What part? I don't even remember if I asked you. What part did you actually leave during?
I don't know. Like, I'm like, look at my notes. Because what do I remember? I can't think of what like was the final nail in the coffin for me. I don't imagine I got through about half of it. Which, funny enough, I remember watching this movie the other night and I guess getting into actually talking about the movie if we're going there. But I was watching it and I'm like, this is what I told you when we started. I'm like, I imagine rewatching this movie, I still will hate it, but for completely different reasons than I did when I was young. And I remember, we get to the part where he's like floating up, talking to the girl, outside of her apartment.
Yep, Patricia Arquette,
and
he's talking to her.
I'm thinking, like, this hasn't been, like, so bad, And then I check the time, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's only 45 minutes into this thing. I thought, we've got to be nearly done, but there's a whole nother half of this thing left to watch. That's the thing. It's only 90 minutes, which is, like, a pretty, that's, like, about what you need to be a movie, and you really shouldn't. This movie is still too long, I felt, for 90 minutes.
It's a drag, man. And I think part of the reason that I felt that drag is because I love how the movie starts. Mm-hmm. I was surprised at how much I loved how the movie started.
As I think it's almost my favorite gag in the movie, John Lovitz, and just how is that what you're talking about with John Lovitz and all that?
Well, not just with John Lovitz.
Okay.
The entire sequence.
The whole setup.
The whole setup of you see John Lovitz, that whole thing happens. He falls, he dies, he goes to hell. You get to see hell. You get to meet the various demons populating it. Your Kevin Nealon demon and your
I like the Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin Nealon is great. Blake Clark is great.
Who's Blake Clark?
He's the guy with the glasses and the clipboard. He's like the administrative assistant demon.
Oh yeah. He is great. He is great in this too.
Like as soon as they said like he checked his schedule to Harvey Keitel, was like, yeah, you gotta shove a pineapple up Hitler's ass.
3 p.m.
3 p.m. And I was like, this is inventive and interesting.
Yeah.
And sure, it's got the classic Adam Sandler man-child somebody doing something weird with his voice performance.
And honestly, to where I was like, what do you think? Because I was honestly feeling like I kind of just wish he was talking normal. Like, I would – I don't know.
I don't feel like it added anything to it. Like,
no.
I get like, okay, yeah, he's bullied. They explain he got hit in the face by a shovel, whatever.
That's just very fine. Of that time to be that like extreme of a character.
Yes.
This is the lead of your movie and he's going to talk like this the whole movie.
Right.
This is what you're going to have to listen to me talk like this and my face looks like this. Also, they don't justify. He's like, I got hit in the face with a shovel. And they do nothing to justify, like, it wasn't a magic shovel that froze his face that way. Just apparently getting hit in the face with a shovel permanently changed his face and his voice.
But
a lot of plot holes in this.
It's a hell. What? Listen, I mean, we have a very progressive mixed race family in hell, which is also good. Satan had a black son. Good job.
Yep. I like Tiny for as much as it goes. I like Tiny as an actor. I like him as his character.
And Reese Evans is fun. Even the fact you get a Harvey Keitel, you get Rodney Dangerfield.
I remember I wrote down that Harvey Keitel is really giving it his bare minimum in this movie. Like, I love Harvey Keitel, and I did not feel like we were getting the full Harvey Keitel experience in this. Mm-hmm. You know, some characters were definitely, you know what I mean? Tiny and what's his name? We said that was the guy who was with the clipboard. Like
Blake Clark. Yeah.
Like Blake Clark, like Keitel was kind of there for a lot of it. Is like, I'm the devil. This is happening. I'm mm-hmm. Harvey Keitel. I'm getting paid a lot of money to just be here as Harvey Keitel.
Right. He's clearly getting the most. He's getting the biggest paycheck out of anybody besides Adam Sandler on this movie. Far and away. And so it's fine if you get Harvey Keitel phoning it in, that's way better than like Alan Covert phoning it in, you know, which is most of this movie, unfortunately.
Oh, Alan Covert like, being his roommate, right?
Yeah. And well, not just Alan Covert. Like this is the big problem I have with this movie is that it goes from being like a fantastical version of like a wacky Adam Sandler comedy to being too normal, and almost like it goes the extremes that it goes to are too extreme from being hyper crazy and fantastical to hyper normal. I wish that they just stayed in Crazy Town the entire time.
I didn't feel like Alan Covert was really giving his all in this either. I'll say while we were still in hell, like for example, talking about Kevin Nealon and like the big like gorilla demon.
Yes.
Kevin Nealon, you know, Harvey Keitel causes tits to grow on his head. But I kind of liked their like kind of sweet. Like at first I remember writing down, I'm like, this they don't seem to be judging so much the fact that he's really into the tits on his head, and him with the gorilla demon are like forming a relationship. I was like, oh, that seems like almost progressive in that we're not judging this thing really. Like it's funny, but it's not like ew, gay, weird, you know, so much. It's just there. And yet, then the movie goes very deep into the like where the gag is just that, like, oh, is his roommate gay? Or with the Clint Howard cross-dresser / trans character, where, like, the full joke is, oh, gross, could you be gay? You know, or, oh, look at the, you know, gross, look at this unattractive cross-dressing person.
Right.
Comes back again and again, where the joke is still just, oh, look at that ugly cross-dresser.
Right. And that's, again, in addition to it being in like normal world, it also becomes like the normal, typical lowbrow comedy of that time.
Yeah.
Instead, they had this whole opportunity to do this crazy, inventive, really like unique movie. And as soon as they got out of hell, they squandered those opportunities. Except for, I will say, I did appreciate the entire Harlem Globetrotter sequence. That was really fun.
Sure. I'll say it's another place because I was like, oh, is that Dana Carvey as the thing? Which, interesting that, like, Tiny is possessing Dana Carvey as the referee, except Dana Carvey is doing a voice. He's, like, talking like this.
Right.
This is my referee voice. And I'm like, once again, that's another thing where I'm like, you don't need to do the voice, Dana. Like, this would be perfectly good if you were just acting like a regular person. Again, the things that are happening are crazy. This is where like you need to have some level of grounding in order to make the things that are crazy pop, because like another thing was like Patricia Arquette's character as the girl, I didn't know, is this woman homeless or is this woman mentally challenged that she's like into little Nikki's character. I thought it made sense that when he's floating up to her, like when he's sneaking into her apartment, that like they do the gag where you think she's going to let him in and then she bear maces him. I did like mm-hmm. that. But up until before that point, when he's still acting like a total creep weirdo, like he seems like he probably has some mental issues or something. And she's just like, ah, you're so funny. He licks her hand uh-huh. and she's just like, ah. And then like she gets turned off when he starts saying rude things to her. Uh-huh. Just, you know, there wasn't enough grounding in places, you know, like in these other places that when everything is crazy, then you don't have any comparison to what's supposed to be considered weird, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, well, that's improv 101, right? Or I guess 201, depending on what school you go to. But I think that as soon as, instead of being in the world of hell and a little bit of heaven, when we have our fun little Reese Witherspoon cameo, instead of being in the world of the afterlife during the entirety of the movie, or the large majority of it, which is what I think should have happened, we wind up spending about 2/3 of the movie on Earth with a situation that's impossible to do, which is trying to ground these absolutely insane, crazy town characters. Yeah. It just, it's not, there's no way that it could have been done effectively in the amount of time that this movie has.
Like, at least once again, I think you really need to play up, because you really need to play up that, yeah, that extreme. You have to have a solid grounding to make the crazy things make sense.
Because, even the stuff in hell not make felt sense, but grounded. Because it's grounded in the crazy world.
Well, yeah, and that's even the hell they're presenting is like, yes, it's hell, but it's it's day to day. You know, it's like hell's a regular place too. I never quite understood like how we're supposed to feel about hell, because they definitely talk about, oh, there needs to be like a balance, you know, of good and evil. But then like they're definitely playing as like things, you know, talking about Earth, about like killing the innocent, burning. It's like, are we supposed to be rooting for these guys in hell? Because sometimes they seem to just be like, yeah, we're regular guys and we only punish bad people. And then other times it's like, no, all that stuff about satanic panic and kill and be evil, you know. So, on the one hand, I'm like, I know there's a thing. It's like, it's just an Adam Sandler comedy. It's just fun. But like, no, because there are great comedies that take these things into account, you know, where you have to measure them against that.
Right. Exactly. And I think when you look at it as an Adam Sandler comedy, it feels out of place. It doesn't feel like other movies in the Happy Madison cinematic universe, even though this is overtly a part of the Happy Madison cinematic universe, to the fact we even have Carl Weathers as Chubbs.
I actually really enjoyed that he was just there.
Yeah.
It doesn't really add anything to the movie, but it was a fun cameo that he, within his own universe, brought this character back. Yeah,
there's a lot of, you got Rob Schneider coming back from The Waterboy.
He's just there, yes. Well, and even how, I was looking it up, like, the girl's love interest, I don't remember her name, but she's all of the first four Happy Madison movies, the female love interest is a VV name.
Oh, like, yeah.
Vicky Valancourt and
Valerie Varin in this movie.
Exactly. Which, these are fun things of like, this is the Happy Madison thing. There's going to be a VV girl. There's going to be these same players, you know, like
Veronica Vaughn. But that's, yeah, but you have all, and then you have all these great little comedic characters. You know, you have Quentin Tarantino showing up. You have John Witherspoon showing up.
He was one of my favorite things. Honestly, I said, is that Quentin Tarantino? And then I said, is this Quentin Tarantino's best acting role he's ever done? And I think it might be, you know, like,
it's great. And John Witherspoon's great in this. Henry Winkler for his one.
Just as himself.
Or just to him
to be attacked by bees.
It's great. But why is the rest of the movie not as great as those parts? Because those parts are allowed to exist in this insane yet grounded reality, instead of having to exist in reality where you're throwing insane people into it.
There's certain things, like what I remember, how he doesn't understand what food is, but I'm like, we just established they have pineapples in hell. So does that mean he only thinks pineapples are for shoving up Hitler's ass?
Like, yeah.
You know, Yeah, just sometimes. I mean, once again, like I these things are so satisfying when you really think through the rules of the world and don't just throw it out there because this will be funny. This will be funny without thought to like whether it meshes well or makes, you know, makes logical sense within the realm of the movie. You know, it's the rules. You know, like even like Looney Tunes or whatever. It's like cartoon stuff has to have you have to set rules and then stick to those rules.
Right.
Wile E. Coyote can walk on air as long as he doesn't look down. And yes. As soon as he looks down, he will fall. But if you ever once break that rule, then you've broken the trust of the viewer. Like you've broken those rules that you've set for your universe.
Exactly. And you broke the trust of your audience because you in this movie. You set up a very fun, chaotic world that's compelling, and I was drawn into it, and then just became some middle-of-the-road Saturday afternoon on Comedy Central last movie. It's
ultimately very middle-of-the-road.
Yeah. It's such a
shame. I didn't hate this, but, like, once again, when I got 45 minutes in, I was like, another 45 minutes, huh?
Yeah. I don't think I hated it either, but I was definitely frustrated by it. And I think, like, it's definitely... I don't know if it's a bad movie or not. I think it is. Well, actually, I don't know. It's not a horrible movie. It's bad.
It's bad.
It's not
the worst movie.
Not anywhere close. Like this is probably one of my movies that I do wish was much better than it actually is.
Yeah, like, because it's got like a fun premise. And again, like a lot of the imagination they do put into these things is fun. Going back to the beginning where we talked about John Lovitz and just how like, at first I'm like, oh, this is weird. Like, this is a very, again, year 2000, like guy looking at a woman through the window and he's like, then he dies and we establish like, oh, he's going to hell because he's a bad person for doing this thing. And then his punishment is being sexually assaulted by a giant bird. And as he is, like, as this giant bird appears and is humping him, he's just yelling, I deserve this. And they bring that back. I almost wish they brought it back a third time. Cause once again, rule of threes, they only bring it back twice or only do it twice. But John Lovitz being attacked by the giant sexually assaulting bird and yelling, I deserve this was a funny gag.
Yes. It's a funny gag. This movie could have been a great gag machine. Like it was for a nice little chunk of its running time. But here's the crazy part too, is that like I was reading about the critical reception of this movie and this movie came out lambasted. You know, it was nominated for 5 Golden Raspberry Awards, including Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Worst Supporting Actress, Worst Director, and Worst Screenplay, which it lost all those to Battlefield Earth.
Yeah.
Wow. Which I still have not seen.
Strong Razzie year. No, I haven't either, but thank I'm God. Aware of it.
But yeah, strong Razzie year. I mean, the other ones that year were what? Let's see. Yeah, the Flintstones and Viva Rock Vegas, Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2.
See, I kind of like the first Flintstones movie, but I think Viva Rock Vegas doesn't hold up. In comparison,
I do like the original Flintstones movie. I'm with you on that. I did it. You should listen to my Flintstones episode if you haven't yet. That's a great.
You defend it?
Because I have a buddy of mine who talked about hating it, and I watched it, and I was like, "What's wrong with you?" This movie.
I think John Goodman is a perfect Fred Flintstone. I think Rick Moranis is killing it as Barney. Yeah, I think they really did like the best live action Flintstones movie you could ask for. You know, and it was in that same era as like. I feel like the Brady Bunch movie, which I think is another like fun kind of sincere yet meta take on the source material.
Meta take fun stuff. This is all stuff that should have happened in Little Nicky. Yes. You could have had a fun take on the Bible. All right. I would love to see Adam Sandler's version of the Bible. I would love to see him do the Book of Revelations or something. Right.
Well, yeah. And for sure, this is a very, non-denominational for the most part kind of vision of this, which I guess makes sense a lot of ways, but like, you know, Adam Sandler is Jewish, but like Christianity itself, like, yes, there's the priest guy, but like the specifics of that's, again, I don't know the good, evil, even when we get to heaven and it's just like airheaded angels up there, like, what these things mean, there's not really any meaning attached to any of this. There's no subtext to any of this. It's just like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if heaven had airheaded angels in them, and one of them hooked up with Satan, mm-hmm. you know, and made Nikki. But like, it doesn't mean anything. And all of the like, release the evil or release the good, like that doesn't mean anything.
No.
It's just like, you know, it's just one magic power versus another magic power with no like meaning underneath it.
If only there was a way they could have grafted some meaning onto this thing. Oh, if they kept things in hell or heaven, maybe they could have. Here's my, okay, so I was reading the reviews, right? Mm-hmm. So game, I have talked a lot on this podcast, as listeners will know, about Roger Ebert, who I find very divisive in the way I think about Roger Ebert as a person and reading his reviews. Some of his reviews, super inaccurate. Some of his reviews, pretty spot on. This one, a little weird. He gave Little Nicky 2.5 out of 4 stars, which is the highest thing, I think, out of Adam Sandler's body of work that he has rated. I mean, he even has, like, this is how he opens the review. I've met Adam Sandler a couple of times, and he's a nice guy, smart and personable. Considering what I've written about his movies, he could also be described as forgiving and tactful. What I cannot understand is why he has devoted his career to finding new kinds of obnoxious voices and the characters to go along with them. Which doesn't sound like it's going to start a review that's a 2.5 out of 4 star review. But here's the thing. He goes on. He talks about how it kind of works. The movie surrounding Nikki is pretty good. The premise is great. You got Satan. All of the stuff where he's in New York style hell, but he's tricked by his like by being the devil made me do it with the voices in his head. I feel like somehow Roger Ebert has managed to see what this movie could have been and was able to just put on his Sandler blinders and not think about any of the other stuff.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, focus on the good parts.
It's only, I'd say it's only maybe a little, well, 2.5 stars. I was going to say like two out of 5 stars probably, but maybe, but 2.5 maybe, you know what I mean? It's like, it's one of those things, there's enough there. Like I wasn't ever bored. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't loving my experience, but I wasn't ever bored. There were some good gags. I like the two like Satan fans.
Your satanic boys. I love those guys.
Like there's some parts in here where they do the thing, like when those guys were betraying him, I was like, I could buy that these guys were betraying him.
Yeah.
And then even at the end when like, at first I thought the whole gag was just going to be that he beat them up inside the bottle and that was how he wins. But then it is his brother disguised as him. And which, did they establish that he could do that actually without putting on someone's skin? I don't remember. And you just see once again where the rules maybe don't match up. But like, I was like, oh, okay, it is a switcheroo. I bought that. And then the fact that like the way it wins, like once again, the orb doesn't mean anything. It is literally a deus ex machina where, but Ozzy coming out, like how he turns into a bat, but then the way to solve that is Ozzy comes out and bites off of his head. I enjoyed that. I was like, I can't believe that Ozzy Osbourne is buying this much into his own like mythos to do this gag in this movie. And I enjoyed that gag. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's enough stuff in this where I'm like, that's a funny bit. That's a funny bit. Just cohesively, you know, like once again, where I was like, another 45 minutes, huh? You know, like that's kind of how I was like,
I think the best, and keep in mind, by the way, a Roger Ebert 2.5 is like an 80% anywhere else. Roger Ebert is a stickler, and he also grades on a 4-star scale, which is absurd.
Oh, wait, that's 2.5 out of 4 stars?
2.5 out of 4, yeah.
Oh, no, that is too high, it's Roger way too Ebert. High. I thought that was out of 5. No.
2.5 out of 5 makes sense.
No, 2.5 out of 4 is like a pretty good movie.
I know, that's what's so shocking to me about this.
This isn't a pretty good movie. This is, you know, not a not too bad movie.
Here's... ultimately, the real crux of the review that I agree with and I think makes the most sense, and I don't think in general I agree with this, but in this particular instance, I do.
Yeah.
I can see how Little Nicky could have worked. It's just that Sandler at the center is a distraction. He steals scenes. We want him to give them back. I think in a position like this, that the entire rest of the movie is so interesting, and you know he has a huge amount to do with why this movie is interesting. He wrote, you know, he's a co-writer on the movie. Mm-hmm. He is part of the creative engine driving this crazy train, Ozzy Osbourne. but this guy, this Adam Sandler guy, happens to try and play an outsized, weird-talking, weird-faced character instead of just allowing us to be with him, or tries to play that character on Earth as opposed to just letting him deal with his own bullshit in the afterlife, in hell, in heaven, wherever you want it to be. I think if that had happened, then maybe we would have gotten something really truly interesting and cool, mm-hmm. as opposed to something that's like interesting halfway and it yeah. doesn't feel like it fully captures the magic yeah. that it could have.
I just, yeah, because I didn't really care. That's the ultimate thing. I didn't really care what was happening. You know what I mean? Like, even again, if it's just a silly comedy, like, I want to really care about, I still want to care about what's going on. I'm like, I don't really care about Nicky. He's annoying. I don't, you know.
I don't. But it is what it is, man.
I don't even, and once again, I'm like, why do I care if Harvey Keitel devil is or isn't the ruler of Satan? I still don't see why that's a good thing that he is the ruler of hell, I meant. And, you know,
I don't really care. And the brothers either.
Taking over Earth, I was like, that doesn't seem so, yeah.
Yeah.
I care in relation to Nicky? Why does Nicky care if Earth becomes, again, it's that balance of good and evil, but like we haven't established why that's important to our protagonist. He only cares really about his dad.
There's no grounding where there should have been. There's nothing explained where there should have been a lot more explanation. It all just feels so just, all right, we're going to throw stuff at the wall. We're going to take this concept and hopefully people buy into the concept.
And some of it, and again, some of it sticks. They threw enough stuff that like some of it sticks, but not enough that like I would ever want to watch this movie again.
Oh, no. I mean, I'll watch a compilation of the best jokes from this movie all
day. Yeah, once again, deserve this.
I watch the kid at the Harlem Globetrotters game say, I'm here for the beer and the bitches any day of the week. It's a great, I laughed out loud on my couch watching that. I don't do that often.
His parents constantly, like, just instill, like, this is all part of the show. This is just, the Harlem Globetrotters stepping up every time.
Oh, my God. But, hey. It's rare to talk about a movie on this podcast that the video game scored higher than the Rotten Tomatoes did.
Oh, did it?
We found it. Yes, the Little Nicky video game for Game Boy Color has a 67.75 on Game Rankings. Rotten Tomatoes. This movie has a solid 22%.
Oh wow!
But
that must be a decent Game Boy Color game.
I mean, it got an 8.5 and an 8 on IGN. The only things that took it down were GameSpot and Nintendo Power's reviews.
I'm like, what kind? Is it a platformer? Does it have any of the comedy in it? Or is it just like a decent platformer?
It's rated T for teen, which is tough to do on a Game Boy Color game.
Yes, yeah. For that era, what were you going to put in a game that was? I mean, literally, I bet it's only because of the like satanic themes.
Oh, actually, you know. I'm going to see if I can find. They have a review from Frank Provo of GameStop or GameSpot, who called it unpleasant.
Oh, it doesn't sound like an 8%, 80%.
What do they have? This one's the bad one. Nah, this is pretty. Ugh. This is. I should have. This review is unpleasant. I should have looked at the. I should have looked at this review instead of the Roger Ebert one beforehand and pulled a good pull quote. But you know what? That's podcasting for you. Sometimes that's fuck it up live.
It's live. You're hearing it right here, warts and all.
Mm-hmm.
Just like tits on head and all.
Tits on head and all. Alex, I am very glad that you made me watch Little Nicky. I never would have otherwise, and I now have a different kind of appreciation for Adam Sandler than I had before. I already appreciated the guy, and now, look, you made me think, oh, this guy understands heaven and hell in a way that I never thought he ever would.
Yeah. Thank you. And as I said, this was kind of a closing of a loop for me. As I said, I never finished the movie. It was this thing I walked out for reasons that I, you know, don't agree with now. And so for me to I'm sure I never would have chosen to watch this movie for any other reason too, if you hadn't been like, yeah, pick a movie that you want to talk about. And so, we both have each other to thank for making each other watch Little Nicky.
I'm so glad. Yeah, you finally adults. Got a chance to finish your childhood, not dream of watching the rest of Little Nicky, instead of just waiting for somebody's car to show up to come pick you up and take you home.
Yep.
Hey, we did it together.
You and me.
Alex, where can the listeners find you on the internet if they want to, for whatever reason, disagree with you on Little Nicky?
Yeah, tell me I'm wrong and this is the greatest movie ever made. You can find me at alexdenny.com. I'm the Alex Denny on Instagram, Alex Denny Actor on Twitter, and of course you can check out my podcast, my improvised talking animal podcast, Island Life with Alex Denny. We've been on hiatus for a little while as things were opening up and I was focusing on some other things, but there's 53 episodes for your listening pleasure, including one featuring our own Jay Light, and hopefully be working out how I want to bring the show back in the near future, because I do love playing with all of my animal friends.
It's a great show. I've got parrots chirping outside my window right now, speaking of animal friends. I hope you can hear that on the mic, listeners.
It's like we're on the island.
Yes. You can find me at Diet J on Twitter and Instagram, jlightcomedy.com for show dates, live and live streamed. And if you like the podcast, tell a friend. Subscribe to the Patreon if you got a couple bucks to spare. And that's it. This has been Blockbusting. Go see something good for a change.